Good morning. Now today we are kickstarting a series called Finding Rest. Say Finding Rest. And it is really a relevant series for our busy, busy world today. You know, if I ask 10 people in this room, and all 10 out of 10 will tell me, Pastor, we are busy, right? Whether you are a student on exam or on holiday, a businessman working adult, a young parents, I think we will respond to the question, how are you, with this phrase, Pastor, I am busy. And that's just the reality of the life that we are living in today, that we are living in a busy, busy world. And because of that, being busy is almost compulsory. Okay, it's almost compulsory. It's almost as if there's no option for us not to be busy. In fact, we feel guilty or we feel wrong to tell people that we are not busy in this world that we're living in. We have the pressure to tell that we are busy, and regardless of... yesterday, someone told me that, Pastor, sometimes I'm a busy person, but sometimes I'm a busybody. Okay, there's a difference. But being busy also makes you feel and look important. And sometimes we want to out-busy someone else because that makes us feel good. That makes us feel important. I know there are good kind of busy, there are not so good kind of busy, but the fact is that we live in a busy, busy world. But yet, our soul is constantly restless, right? Physically, we're exhausted. We fill our schedule with so many activities and even relaxation and entertainment. We are physically exhausted. We are also spiritually dry. That while our spiritual life is dry, we have no life. Emotionally, we are constantly anxious, constantly striving. It's funny how today we live in a world that potentially we are the most prosperous than ever. We are the most connected than ever. We are the most knowledgeable than ever. We are most technologically savvy than ever. But yet, our soul is more restless and anxious than ever. And we live in this world whereby it's about doing more, it's about having more, it's about getting more, it's about working hard and playing hard, it's about experiencing to the max. But yet our soul is restless. And then we go all the other extreme, right? And we try to find rest. But unfortunately, we find rest at the wrong place. And this is some of the misconception of rest. Rest is not the absence of work. We think that, you know, let me just work for 10, 15 more years and then I'll finally have rest. Or we say, I'm going to work hard for one and a half years after this project is done, and I'm going to take 3 months break. See, rest is not the absence of work. Rest is not a license to be lazy or to escape work responsibility. That's not rest. Rest is not merely a day off or taking a vacation. You can be on vacation and yet still be restless. And sometimes after a vacation with family, we need another vacation just to recover from that vacation. Rest is not just merely taking a day off. You can sleep, you can take a nap. All those are good, but you can still wake up anxious, restless. It's not that I work hard, therefore I deserve to play hard. It is not about that. It is not having stress. Rest is not an absence of trouble, of stress, of burden. Rest is not as long as I don't have these issues in my life. You can have rest and yet still go through the most challenging season of your life. So if that's not rest, then what is rest? Where can we find rest? So over the next 4 or 5 weeks, it is our desire to help us find rest in God and what is true biblical rest so that we can live our lives, we can lead our family, we can parent our young children, we can lead our business, and we can go through exams from a place of restedness. Okay, so that's our desire. Now let's look to someone who understood rest. And this person understood rest because he wrote the first five books of the Bible, and he wrote Psalms 90. We want to look at the life of Moses. And Psalms 90, it's very unique, because it's the oldest psalms of the book of Psalms. Because it's the only psalms that is written by Moses. which is 500-600 years before David and Solomon, who wrote most of the other Psalms. So it's very unique, very precious piece of literature that we're going to read, written by Moses, who understood. When you read Psalms 90, you could sense his restfulness. You could sense his restedness. And potentially Psalms 90 is written in the same generation as the book of Genesis and Exodus. So I'm going to read. So Moses, a great leader and great prophet of God in the Old Testament, he was busy. He was leading a congregation of 2 to 3 million, the nation of Israel. The Bible says that it was 600 men, 600,000 men, plus wives and children, probably about 2-3 million congregation. Can you imagine the number of, imagine potluck, 2-3 million people potluck. Can you imagine? The Bible, Exodus, speaks about how from morning till night, people line up to see him, to bring forth their issues, their conflict, their problems. And potentially Psalms 90, scholars believe that he either write it as a prayer to God, either before they went into wilderness, when the 12 spies came back and 10 of them give negative reports, and he was discouraged, he was basically feeling let down by the people. Or potentially he wrote this at the end of the wilderness years, where he lost his sister Miriam, his brother Aaron, and where he realized that he couldn't lead the people into the promised land. But regardless when he wrote this Psalms 90, we know that he wrote it in a time of uncertainty. He wrote it when the nation of Israel had no home because they were in the wilderness, but yet from such a place of restedness. So I'm going to read. So Moses began, he says, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations." Say the word dwelling place. So Moses started his prayer. Isn't it beautiful that we can read Moses' most intimate prayer unto God? So Moses says, "Lord, you've been our dwelling place." It speaks about when we start our prayer, we affirm the bigness of God. We affirm the greatness of God in our dwelling place. And this dwelling place is very precious. It is a place where God be with us. In Genesis, in the Garden of Eden, that is a dwelling place of God and man dwelling together. And Moses is saying that you have been our dwelling place in all generations, even when we were slaves in Egypt. Even in my father's, my grandfather, my great-grandfather generation, you have been our dwelling place even when we were slaves. That you have been our dwelling place. It speaks about the longing of Moses to want God to be with him. You know, today, do we long to be in God's dwelling place? A lot of us don't. And I read this recently. It says that our spiritual state, our spiritual condition of a lot of us today is that we are spiritually dehydrated, but yet we are not thirsty. We don't know that we are dehydrated, but yet we are not thirsty. So Moses longed to be with God. And he says, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you have formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God." And I can imagine, maybe the mountains, Moses was in Mount Sinai, maybe. Or maybe at the end of the wilderness, he was in Mount Nebo, and he see the mountains, and he see the grounds. He says, "God, you are God of creation. Before all this was formed, you are God." And today, as we handle our life, as we juggle between our children's needs, and we juggle between our work demands and business deals, and as we juggle all this, could we really say that, "God, you are God"? That you are God. I am a mere man. It's a declaration, an acknowledgement that God is in control and we can find rest. And as Moses wrote this, Moses was also, he wrote Genesis, and probably he was reminded of God's original intention for rest in Genesis 2. It speaks about creation. So God created the world, and thus heaven and earth were finished, and the host of them. And the seventh day, God finished his work, and he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work. Verse 3, so God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Holy means set apart. Because on it, God rested from his work he has done in creation. Now, God did not rest because he was tired. A lot of us, we do that, right? We stay up, we do a lot of things, we enjoy our games, enjoy our reading, enjoy our work, and watch some, I don't know, series, and we are only sleep because we're tired. God did not do that. God did not sleep because he did not rest because he needed. He did not rest because he was tired. But he rested so that he can enjoy the work of his hands. He can enjoy, and he called it blessed. You see, rest is God ordained. Rest is instituted by God, and God blessed it and called it holy, set apart. And rest is really being set apart to spend time with God. Rest is a God-given rhythm. Say the word rhythm. You see, God wants to enjoy the creation, and we are the apex of his creation. Just last week, I had lunch with one of our brother in Iowa I Mall, and he has a 13-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter. And he was sharing with me the different personality of the two daughters. And he said it about three times. I says, what do you do? He says, Pastor, I really enjoy my daughters. I really enjoy the relationship with them. I really enjoy spending time with them. I really enjoy interacting with this gift and that delight and that joy. In the same way, God delights to be with his creation. God delights to dwell with us. And therefore, work and rest is God-given rhythm for our lives. Yes, work is also given by God. Work is also blessed by God. Some of you are saying that, rejecting that. No, work is not. But it is. Biblical work is ordained by God, so is rest. It's built in to the rhythm of our lives. So what is rest? Rest or Sabbath, it's really a time set apart to the Lord. Now you can be on a day off doing your daily routine and yet still rest because you have set apart that time to be with God. You can be on vacation. You can be on running your daily errands, fetching your kids to school. You can be that rest. You can be running on a treadmill. But when you do your rest set apart to be with God, to enjoy, to delight in God, now that is rest. Part of being human is to rest like God and to rest with God. And I hope that we don't feel guilty when we rest, because it's God-given rhythm for our lives. And then Moses reiterated that in Exodus when he received the 10 commandments from Mount Sinai. And the 4th commandment was to remember the Sabbath, to remember the rest day and to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do your work, but on the 7th day is the Sabbath of the Lord. And Moses added this, verse 11, he says, for in the 6 days God has made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the 7th day, therefore. So Moses was basically saying, God has created the world. What is it that is so important? What is it that you feel that you are doing that is... But God has created the world and everything in it. Therefore, God blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. You see, number two, rest is also trusting God who is in control. When we find that we are not able to rest in God, potentially we want to be in control. Potentially we cannot let go. We cannot trust God. So Moses is saying that God created the world and everything that is in it. What more? What more do you want to trust God, that God is in control? Right? So when we are not able to rest, when we want to control everything, we want to manage everything from our family to our workplace, to our, potentially we have a control issue. We have a trust issue. And potentially we may have a pride issue, that we feel that we have made it with our own hands. We have made it with our own abilities. But when we rest, we're saying that God, you are in control. So as we read Psalms 90, we will begin to find that Moses trusted God. Psalms 90, as you continue to read the Psalms, Moses says, Lord, would you teach us to number our days so that we may get a heart of wisdom? So it's the acknowledgement that our life is in God's hands. There are a lot of things that is beyond our control. And when we begin to trust God, we begin to see the greatness of God and we begin to see our limitation, our shortness of our lives. It says, return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. So basically, the few verses before speaks about how in life we may have 70, 80 of years. Lord, would you teach us to number the days? Verse 14, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love that we may rejoice and be glad in our ways. So Moses find trust in God. Today, deep down in your soul, is your soul trusting God? Or is your soul trusting on whatever that you can control? When it comes to the path of your children, are you young children, young parents, older parents, do you trust God with your children? Or do you want to dictate everything? When it comes to your business, your workplace, work life, do you trust God deep down that God is in control? I like verse 17. You can see the rhythm of rest and work again. It says, let the favor of the Lord be upon us and establish the Lord, the work of our hands upon us. Established. So as we rest in God, the favor of the Lord will then in turn establish the work of our hands. Do you trust God and find our sufficiency and satisfaction in Him? That's where we rest. So rest, yes, you can be on a run. You can be on vacation. You can be at home. That's not the issue. The issue is, do you trust God when you rest? So number two, rest is trusting God who is in control. And thirdly, as we go into the New Testament, it's interesting how Moses wrote about rest in Genesis. It was mentioned in the first two chapters of the Bible. God created it. God blessed it. And Moses reminded them as a commandment, the Ten Commandments, rest. And as we go into the New Testament, Jesus mentioned rest again. And the consistency of rest is amazing. Remember, I mentioned rest is a dwelling place, right? So in the New Testament, Jesus himself speaks about rest. And I know this is a common verse that we know, we put it in our wallpaper, but I'm going to just unpack it for us. Let's read this together. One, two, go. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So Jesus says, rest is coming to Him. I love God. God is constantly a personal invitation to Him. Now come to Jesus. Come to me, Jesus said. But today, rest, we come to vacation. We come to exercise routine. We come to Netflix. And we come to everything else except to Jesus. And we are missing the point. He says, come to the person of Jesus, not come to a teaching, not come to tradition, not just come to church, not come to serving. And a lot of times we have replaced doing church things for coming to Jesus. You can come to church and still miss Jesus completely, right? You can attend a live group gathering and still miss Jesus completely. It reminds us in the gospel, right? When Mary and Joseph, when they were going to Jerusalem to attend a festival, a Jewish festival in the temple. As they were leaving, guess what? They lost Jesus. And they didn't even realize that Jesus was gone until a few days later. And sometimes when we come to Jesus, we think that it's coming to a church activity. We think that it's coming to sing some songs. We think that it's coming to some programs. That's all good. But we may miss the point. And COVID tested us, right? When COVID happened, gathering is taken away. Programs is taken away. Serving, in the most part, is taken away unless you're the tech crew and you're like work overtime. But all these are taken away, and before you know it, 2 months, people say they are spiritually dry. They are spiritually lost. Their faith is shaken. They feel that God is not real. Why? Because we have lost the art of coming to Jesus. Something must be wrong, right? That within 4 or 6 weeks that our faith is shaken. And COVID tested that because we have lost the art of coming to Jesus. To coming to the person of Jesus. And Jesus is extended the invitation to us again. Come to me. All who labor, all who work, all who are weary, come to him. Jesus didn't say, come to me, all of you who are good, or all of you who have done, finished your work. He says, if you're weary, if you're work, come to me. And the word heavy laden is the burden that people put upon you. And in their context, it's the spiritual burden. It's the rule, it's the law that the Pharisee put upon them that they could not do, that spiritual obligation, tradition, religious. It's not. Jesus says, come to me. Today, if there is burden that you carry or burden that people put on you, Jesus says, come to me and I will give you what? I will give you what? Rest. Come to the person of Jesus. And sometimes we get so busy with church activity, we completely missed it all together. And Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly and in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. You know, in the olden days, the yoke is usually a wooden equipment, and it's custom made to fit the ox, the animal, and they will yoke it with another ox. And typically, they will yoke a younger, a less experienced, a weaker ox with a mature, more experienced and stronger ox that will join them together, and the yoke comes with a harness so that the farmer can direct where the ox goes. So when Jesus says, come take my yoke, he's saying that, would you let me have control in your life? Would you stop striving and let me take control? And would you allow that yoke to yoke upon me? So that Jesus is that stronger, more wise, more grace, more power, so that we can yoke upon Jesus. Today, if you are carrying a burden that you are not supposed to carry on your own because you have put it upon yourself. And it's kind of like cycling. How many guys cycles? So little. Okay, I know a lot of us tried to cycle during COVID years, okay, including myself. And 2 years down the road, my bicycle is collecting rust at home. Cycling, it's easy if it's all geared up, tires with air. But cycling uphill is a whole different story, right? How many guys love cycling downhill? Wow. I love that. It makes you feel like you're a Superman or something, right? But when you're cycling uphill, It's not easy. And yoking with Jesus is almost as if, as you're cycling uphill, imagine a rope tied to a car and the car just brings you uphill. Wow, you can even take your foot off the pedal and allow that the car to carry you. Just last week, we had lunch after meeting in church. I think Pastor Eugene was in my car. And as we reach the place, I feel there was a leak in my car coolant, and it was almost empty, and I could feel my car just suddenly just weaken, and it tells me to stop my car immediately. And we stopped the car, and I knew that I had to bring my car to a service center. Me and Pastor Eugene didn't try to push the car to the service center. No, what do? We call the service center, and they sent a tow truck. We didn't try to push the car on our own, but the tow truck towed the car. And it was just so easy. So in the same way, sometimes when we carry burdens, yes, in life, there will be burden, there will be work, there will be pressure. That's part and parcel of life. But the question is, who is in control? And the question is, who are you yoking with? And Jesus knew yoke. And Jesus says, come, take my yoke. And that offer is for us. And sometimes we still ignore it. We are stubborn. We still want to. Jesus says, take my yoke. Come on. Take my tow truck. Take my. My yoke is easy. And my burden is light. And Jesus says, learn from me. And the word learn here is learner, which is the same root word as disciple, follower, learner. So the question is, are we teachable? Are we teachable to allow God and allow the Word to teach us so that we can find rest in our soul? And as we find rest in our souls, as we allow God to refresh us, as we allow God to renew us, you see, rest is finding refreshment and renewing in Jesus. And out of that rest, can you imagine that out of that restedness, if you have allowed God to refresh you daily, renew you daily, can you imagine out of that restedness, you parent your child? What a different parent you will be. Your kids maybe will like you more. Can you imagine out of that restedness, you go to work on Monday? Out of that restedness, you manage the affairs of your household. Out of that restedness, you serve in your company, you lead the business. Out of that restedness, you serve in church. That we serve out of the abundance of that restedness and of that ongoing overflow of the delight in God. And out of that abundance, you serve. Out of that abundance, you teach, you sing, you usher. Can you imagine? And sometimes we mistaken all those things and we miss the point of coming to Jesus. Spending time with God, it's a lot like running. Okay, I don't run, but I have a friend that came back and he runs. Okay, he runs marathons, he runs ultra marathons, which is 50 km and above. And he says today, if you speak to runners, he say, oh, the first 5 km is a bit laborious, but after 5 km, it's, whew, before you know it, it's 15 km. I'm like, wow, I get that when I'm driving, not running. The first 15 minutes when you want to spend time with God, it is always the most distracted. The most distraction today is not the devil, but it's our smartphone. The first 15 minutes, we are jittery. Our mind begins to wander. I have this thing to do, this person to call. And our smartphone is, if you were to just persevere the first 5 kilometers, the first 15 minutes, you just pray, just read the Psalms over and over, read the Word over and over again, and just speak in tongues. And when you pass that 15 minutes or 20 minutes, before you know it, it's 45 minutes. And that's where the delight and the joy and the dwelling place of God begin to fill our soul. And if we don't like dwelling with God, we don't like being with God's presence, then you won't like heaven very much. And we gotta evaluate ourselves that if we don't like to be in the presence of God, wow. And I know sitting here, all of us desire that. But potentially we are too distracted, too busy, too heavy laden, too pressured, too frustrated. But we need to come to find the refreshment and renewing in Jesus. And we got to put that aside. We got to find a rhythm of rest and to persevere through the first 15, 20 minutes of distraction. And when we hit that zone, guess what? The delight, the refreshment, the renewal, the intimacy, it will come. And it's out of that place we can do all that we are called to do. We can work the rhythm of work and rest. I want to end with this quote by St. Augustine. He is one of the most important early church fathers in 300 to 400 AD. His mom was a Christian. His father was a pagan. And growing up, he chose to live, to worship, to believe a pagan God that is no longer exists today. But he pursued knowledge. He pursued philosophy. He pursued pleasures in wine, in women. And he wrote that. And potentially, his autobiography potentially is the earliest Christian autobiography that we could find. It's called The Confessions. And he came to conversion. He came to God when he was about 30 years old, where his soul was just so bothered and so burdened by the weight of sin. And he turned to God. And as he write that, I don't know what, 7 or 8 volume of that book, he begin his book by this statement. He says, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." So today, we want to kickstart this series to know, to have the right understanding of biblical rest. The rest is a God-given rhythm. And we got a rhythm that into our daily, weekly, monthly schedule. Rest is trusting God who is in control. Rest is about who do you trust. And rest is about finding refreshment and renewing in the person of Jesus.